because Newt was a barn cat, so she actually pooped outside. And so she, I don't know, I feel like that's, it's like having new kids, right? It's all you talk about is poop. But I mean, her, she has the most, like, she buries it all the way down, and then it's, so she really buries it, whereas the other two kind of like, oh, I covered it, right? No, she really buries it. And then it, she gets really bejiggety if you're like scooping it out, and she's just like, I swear, her inner monologue must be like, hurry up, the birds are gonna find us. What are you doing? Like, this thing is gonna eat us. Why are you uncovering the poop? Right?
That's so funny
So I
'cause
have to wait until she's eating so that I can clean it without her like getting in the box and like trying to rebury things. Like,
Oh my
ugh.
gosh, that's funny 'cause one of the cats, the long-haired, is a absolute digger, man. She gets to all the way to the bottom to cover that sucker up, you know. And you can just hear in there, whoosh, 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 you know. It's like, good grief, you got it. You got
Yeah,
it, you
right.
know.
You got it. It's covered. Yeah.
That's crazy, you know,
Hi,
but
my name's Alan McNish, and this is FormulaOneBlog.com.
I'm David Hobbs, and this is FormulaOneBlog.com.
Hi, I'm Steve Matchett, and you're listening to FormulaOneBlog.com.
You're listening to the audio journal of F1 Opinion, FormulaOneBlog.com podcast.
Please.
Hello, and thank you for joining me at FormulaOneBlog.com for podcast number 473. This is Todd. Yes, I know. Wait for it.
No, Todd, not now.
That's right, a.k.a. Negative Camber. And tonight, for your kind consideration, Mercedes and their open letter, Lewis to the rescue, and the 2017 regulation changes. Who's for it and who's against it? But before covering any of that stuff, I have to introduce my guest tonight, which of course means... That's right, I gotta go all the way to the right coast of America, nestled in our nation's capital, where men and women, well, they do things the rest of us would rather not know about. Things we shouldn't know. Things we couldn't know about. And probably things they shouldn't think about. But regardless, rising above all of that is the lovely, the redoubtable Grace. How you doing tonight, Grace?
Doing pretty good, Todd. How are you?
I am doing well. You've had a bit of a hiatus of late.
I did indeed, but I'm glad to be back.
Well, good, good. What'd you do in your big hiatus?
Well, I had work, that's why. It wasn't really that great of a hiatus, you know. Not like I was in Australia or something, you know, I was in somewhere cool. I just was working on podcast night.
It wasn't anywhere cool. Nothing you care to brag about or anything.
I was in D.C. I go there all the time. It was not
Yes. Well, D.C., you know.
You know.
Yeah.
It was like 20 minutes from my house, but still
well,
had to
you
work
know
it
that,
out.
You know that town like the back of your hand, Grace.
Sure. It's not that big. It's only like 13 miles wide. It's a very small space.
It's amazing. It's amazing, isn't it? Just crazy. Grace, what are you imbibing for tonight's podcast?
I'm drinking water. I know, man. I was just thirsty. I don't know.
What?
It's a shit.
I know.
You're kidding. Okay. Well,
it's not broken. It's okay. It happens sometimes.
Everybody's listening at home going, okay, wait a minute. What's wrong with Grace?
I was thirsty. I don't know. I just
Hashtag save Grace.
That's right. It's only the wind. It's fine.
It's just the wind. Oh, my. Well, Grace, as we head into this weekend, It goes without saying. We head into this weekend. We know what it is. It's time for the Spanish Grand Prix at
Barcelona.
That's right, at Barcelona. However, now, here is the thing. It's coming up this weekend for all of your DRS-fueled enjoyment. Mm-hmm. And we have had great feedback from our track talk that Paul does. And so each podcast preceding the race, we had been putting in Paul's track talk. And people liked it a lot.
I like it a lot.
And Paul and I got to thinking, okay, but, you know, that's great that people like it. What we probably should do is separate it and just put it in its own little 3 to 5 minute podcast so people could just quickly listen to that, you know, before they watch the race or whatever. And then that way they wouldn't have to, you know, fast forward through our pie holes talking about news in order to find Paul's track talk, right? So
sure.
I thought, well, this week in Spain, we would try that. So here's what I'm going to do. Now, let me know if you don't like this, but here's what I'm doing. I'm going to take Paul's track talk. I'm going to make its own little track talk podcast, and I'm going to put it in this same podcast feed. So you'll see it in a couple of days, just like you normally see this one, and you can download it, and it'll be Paul's quick track talk, and then that'll prep you for the race, and hopefully you like the separation of the content so it's easier to consume. And if not, let us know, and I'll put them back in the normal podcast. I'm happy either way. This is the length, Grace, that I go to appease our listeners. It's astounding.
It is astounding. If people knew. I'm not being facetious, right?
It's crazy.
What you do behind the scenes.
It's just crazy. So anyway, that's the plan. So be looking for that podcast. Yeah, be looking for that. Okay. But we do have some news to cover this week. There's things happening.
Stuff.
Yeah. I know you're
setting up. I'm sure
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm sure some of it involves Lewis.
Shockingly, it does.
Oh, what? Okay.
Yes, it does involve Lewis. But first, let's talk about all of the kerfuffle, if you will, the drama going on over at Red Bull, shall we?
Oh, yes, please.
Because I know you're going to have an opinion on this. This story.
I think everybody has an opinion on this story, especially right. Vettel.
Oh, I'm out. Crash. Somebody hit me in the rear, turn two, and then somebody hit me in the rear again in turn three. For sake. Honestly, what the are we doing here?
Yeah, that's
great.
Right.
So what you know, what are we doing here?
You know, he had an opinion on this matter, but
heck yes.
You guys will all recall the Russian Grand Prix last week. Daniel Kvyat hit Sebastian twice, took him out of the race, pretty much ended Daniel Ricciardo's goal of finishing fourth in every race known to man. And as a result, the week later, Red Bull has now demoted Daniel Kvyat down to Scuderia Toro Rosso. Now, Helmut Marko, Marko Helmut. Oh, and for those of you new to the podcast, the reason Grace and I say that is it goes back to that old Rankin and Bass, you know, Burgermeister, Meisterburger. What's this, toys? You know, that guy.
Yeah.
So that's where that came from, because we kind of felt like he was like the Burgermeister, Meisterburger.
And it's fun to say.
It is. Helmut Marko, Marko Helmut. Says that Russia was really just the final straw. If you all thought this was draconian, nay. This was the final straw. Crap had already went down, all right? But he has been underperforming this year, according to Helmut Marko, to the tune, folks, of a hefty 0.7 seconds behind Ricciardo in performance. Now, comparatively, Ricciardo has finished fourth place in every race this season until Daniel Kvyat spoiled his chance in Russia. So not happy. Even Daniel Ricciardo was pretty damn mad when he told reporters after the race, yeah, that I think we all know what happened there, and I'm waiting for an apology. And he had no smile. Now, you got to understand, from a guy we call the smiling assassin, who's usually smiling when he's killing you,
right?
When he's not smiling, there's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, the post-race interviews and, you know, Kvyat was pretty much like, yep, everybody's going to tell me shit now, right? Like, yep. I'm going to leave here and everybody's going to yell at me. Excellent.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to have an opinion.
Yeah, yeah, you got it. Yeah, everybody's going to have it. Yeah, okay, bring it.
Yeah, great. Right.
Yeah, he was not ready. Happy. Yeah, he was not happy either. So, last year, basically, Grace, let's face it, Kvyat was ahead of Ricciardo last year in points, and that pretty much earned his place this year at Red Bull and to continue. But the plucky teen, Max Verstappen, will get his ride from Spain onward at Red Bull. So Kvyat goes to Toro Rosso to team with Carlos Sainz. The plucky teen Max Verstappen moves from Toro Rosso to Red Bull to be teamed up with the epic and prolific Daniel Ricciardo. Now, Marco says, now, hang on now. You guys got to also understand that there was a little bit of friction at STR between Carlos Sainz and the plucky teen.
Yeah, so, this is right. This is a win-win for everybody.
Everybody wins, except Daniel Kvyat.
Right, right. It solves a lot of problems by moving him.
Everybody wins, say versus the Russian. So anyway, he says this solves that problem. Unfortunately, Grace, honestly, I see nowhere but down for Kvyat at this point. I mean, STR is in the young driver development program, right? And Danny has already had his shot at Red Bull. So they're going to look for new talent to cut their teeth at STR, not just kind of park Daniel there for in perpetuity, right? So ultimately, I kind of feel bad because I really like this kid. I really do. I think Russia, you know, yeah, he messed up. No question about it. Gosh, if I had a dime for the time that other world champions have messed up, you know, I wouldn't be doing this podcast. So unfortunately for him, it doesn't bode well. Now, ultimately, I guess Danny could look for another ride, but that seems kind of difficult given the lack of opportunities on the grid. And I got to think that, you know, Kvyat, you know, in my mind, Grace, I kind of feel like he sort of was inherited, sort of earned the spot at RBR by default when Vettel left. And some say that it was too early for him to move up. But, you know, then some say, well, we could argue the same with Verstappen. Is it too early to move Verstappen to Red Bull? But if that's the case, everybody said that last year when he came on board at Toro Rosso, and he shut a lot of mouths last year, didn't he?
You know, I think, I don't know. I mean, I guess I would only find that as a credible comment if it actually came from somebody with some technical knowledge, right? Not just, you know, sports journalists, right? Because it seems like always the obvious thing to say. He's young. He's not ready. He's not ready to fight with the big boys, right? That he's not ready for that. And I don't think that's true. I think that he made it to Formula One. It's not like, you know, he just waltzed in here and he's never raced anybody before, right? So I think he knows darn well what he's doing and how to race. And I think that that's a bit of a spurious argument, unless it really came from somebody on the inside or somebody with some, you know, inside knowledge of his personality. They can be like, yeah, you know, another year in the minor leagues might have done him some good. Otherwise, if he was super successful, people would be like, see, they should have brought him up a year earlier, right? They just roll with the wind. And you're right. And if something happens to Verstappen, they're going to say the same thing. Oh, see, it was too early. I told you it was a year too early. But if he does great, they're going to just continue with the, you know, oh, he's this amazing, you know, Verstappen plucky teen thing, you know, and he's amazing and they should have moved him up sooner. So
he's a wunderkind, a phenom.
Exactly. He's the next Michael Schumacher, right? You know what I mean? So again, I kind of see that as just, you know, journalists trying to write headlines, say kind of stuff like that. But I do agree with you. This is like getting sent to the minor leagues when you weren't injured, right? You are, it's hard to come back from something like that. Now, I don't think he can stay with the Red Bull organization and be successful. I think that that's, I agree, right? You know, it's true with anybody's job, right? You know, if you really want to get a promotion, you usually have to switch jobs. So I think that you're going to see the same thing here. I think that if he can continue the rest of this year, you know, keep the car on the island, don't run into people, have a successful year at STR, maybe another team will pick him up, but I don't think he can stay at Red Bull past whatever his contract is.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like, you know, when I say that I think, If I was another team, I would I'd pick up Kvyat, and people are like,
crazy.
And here's the reasoning behind that. Okay, so you got me. I'm 5, 6, 7 tenths off Daniel Ricciardo. All right. Well, what does that mean? Well, Daniel Ricciardo is the guy who everyone says is a world champion. He just doesn't have the car yet. He is absolutely there, thereabouts with Hamilton, Vettel, Alonso, everybody else. Daniel Ricciardo is the man. And if it wasn't for that pesky Renault engine, he'd be winning world championships by now. So if Kvyat, this young kid from Russia, is, you know, a half a second off of that, well, that isn't too bad if you're Force India, Manor, Haas, Sauber, Renault, pick one, you know? That isn't too bad to have a driver of that caliber, considering, no offense, I like Harry Anto, but, you know, he's not, doesn't have the pace of Kvyat, and I think Kvyat showed some serious pace.
No, I agree with that. I think it would be foolish of F1 to let him fall out of our midst at the end of the season or whenever his contract's up. So I hope that somebody does pick him up, because I think that while right now he kind of looks like the next, you know, the answer to Pastor Maldonado's absence, I don't think that's going to continue that way. And I think if he does well at STR, especially if he can do better than Sainz does, that's only going to help him.
Yeah. If he beats Sainz, that's going to help him. And that should be his goal now, is to get back down to STR, put his game face on, put it behind him. The pressure's off. All you got to do now is beat Carlos Sainz. And that's going to help your CV when you are looking at a different team, be it Williams, Renault, Sauber, you know, Force, whatever it might be, you know. That's got to be his mission, no doubt about it.
Absolutely. So I think that would be it. And he's a professional, right? He knows what he's doing. He'll put his game face on, you know, buckle in, and this weekend will be, you know, it's a whole new race. You don't make it this far and aren't successful at brushing it off, right? You have to be able to quickly, within a race, right? You're like, oh, I made that mistake, but I got to keep going, right? So, you know, he'll be fine, and I think as long as he continues to do well, you know, somebody else should pick him up. I think that. Yeah. But I also do think that this was convenient, right? I don't think if Red Bull had the problems between Verstappen and Sainz that they might have made this switch.
Right.
You know, this was just a convenient way of solving a problem they already had. You know, it was like excellent, win-win, right? I don't know that. I think that was kind of weird to demote him.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting. It makes you wonder what Kvyat's contract said in there. Apparently, it didn't say anything about not moving down the team.
So I think I don't know. An interesting one. Well, also on top of the fact, that if you had two Formula One drivers that worked well together, why would you break them up? Right. The other side of it is that they got along. Why would you break them up? But I think it was as much about the friction at STR as it is about Kvyat running into everybody. These past weekends.
And not that I'm a Delphic Oracle or anything, but if Ricciardo was not happy with Kvyat and was waiting for an apology, wait till you get a load of Verstappen, young man.
Yeah.
Because that kid is not backing off, all right?
And you're not going to apologize. Who's not going to apologize? No. Whatever.
It's a racing deal. So the first or second time that Verstappen runs into Ricciardo, runs him wide, there's going to be some fireworks there. You thought the friction was at STR because of Carlos Sainz? Nah.
Just wait.
Yeah, Verstappen's on the march, man. So anyway, it'll be interesting to see what happens. We'll keep an eye on it. But
I mean, this is good. This is good for Verstappen. I think that's the take-home message. I mean, I think he's the big winner in this. And if he can hold on to it and pull it off, this is great.
Yeah. It's great for Mad Max. It's super. Mm-hmm. All right. We talked about a couple of weeks ago, Paul and I did a podcast about the 2017 regulation changes. I won't bore you with those details. You can go back two podcasts and listen to that. And we talk about more in not finite detail, but we do talk in more detail about what changes are proposed for 2017. Now, the fact of the matter is that the teams have been in the press since those 2 weeks, sort of commenting on these proposed 2017 regulation changes. Yeah.
Let me guess. Delphi Oracle. Mercedes doesn't like them.
Wow.
Oh my goodness.
Wow. You nailed it.
Right? Because nothing changes. They're the new Ferrari. Of course, they're doing really well under the current regulations. Why should we change them?
And Toto said, down. And so you're absolutely right. Mercedes And I might add, their posse.
Their posse.
Who is their posse, you ask?
Yeah.
Well, it's Mercedes engine customers. Williams and Force India.
There you go.
And probably Manor, but they no one asked Manor.
That's right. We didn't ask you.
Yeah, well, they don't have a seat at the table. They're not in the F1 strategy group. So Mercedes has been vocal about the regulation change proposed and aren't too keen on some of the initiatives. Now, understandable, as Grace said, from some level, that they're beating the stuffing out of the entire field. And they've made some soft sell comments about how the field is narrowing now. And because we've got these stable regulations, you know, this is that begets good racing, stable regulations. And we all know that. Nod, nod, wink, wink. Meanwhile, they're a country mile ahead of everyone. And I how I enjoyed all the preseason commentary from Mercedes bigging up Ferrari's threat. And that, you know, it's like, whoa, this is going to be really tough. You know, Ferrari's right there, man. They're going to be, you know, winning and stuff. And
don't change the rules. You don't need to change this.
You
see
don't
how
change
Ferrari's
it.
Doing?
I mean, look at the Ferraris, man. I mean, you know, they got us on our toes and the two teams, you know, whoa. So that was what they were saying. You know, it's down to two teams leading the way. But it also creates a sense of a real competition for the title this year. And they're still saying that, you know, even Nico last week, oh, Ferrari, you know, we haven't seen everything from them yet. And okay, whatever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the other thing, too, is there's also some part of it is these rules are written to keep you down, right? You're ultimately going to, A, you're winning, so you don't want the rules to change. And they're changing rules specifically, like Schumacher rules, right? They're specifically creating rules to keep you from being successful. So, yes, you should be a little salty about that, right?
Right. I mean, right, you should, to their credit. You know, if you and I, if I was Toto and you were Niki Lauda. Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. I laughed and I hit a button.
even better.
I know.
Between the Stone Age of it worked.
Wow. Yeah, that was cool.
I didn't get the Niki Lauda connection, but that was fun.
It's a shit
there you go. No, I laughed and hit the button. That's never good. That's a party foul there. Here, have more Coke.
You people wonder why I drink water.
right. I love you guys. You guys are the greatest. So anyway, so if you and I ran Mercedes, you know, clearly we would have issues with some of the regulation changes that really got into where we felt was our strongest, you know, performance aids, right? So one of these things in particular certainly is about the fuel flow. Now, Mercedes says, and their customer teams, Williams and Force India, they all three are not keen to increase the fuel flow rate at all. And they said this would send the wrong sustainability message, suggesting that this is F1's biggest goal to deliver a green message. You know, they're like, well, you know, we're at unheard of efficiencies in engine performance, which that's not BS. That's very true. That's very cool. But they're also saying, you know, we're all about reducing fuel usage and to go back and use more. Well, that would just not make sense, and that would send the wrong message. So they are definitely not for that, which has to make you think that in and of itself is one of the real keys to their performance to be able to perform at that fuel flow rate.
Right. Of course, the thing they're most touchy about, either that or they've been listening to your Formula One can't be green rant for the last 3 years. One or the other, right? Maybe they're avid listeners of this podcast. Hey, Mercedes, what's up? Thanks for listening, you know? Or you're absolutely right.
Right.
I'd like to believe the former, but you know, right?
Right. Right. Who knows? But if I'm them, you know, I'm fighting it just like anybody else. And you might wonder, well, okay, so where was Ferrari? Well, Ferrari's Sergio Marchionne. He even seems reticent about the regulation changes. And that's interesting, given that the team could use this shakeup to make serious ground on Mercedes. But I have to think, well, before I say this, it tells me a couple things. Now, I don't want to weave yarns here that don't exist, but why?
Where's the fun in having your own podcast?
I know, right. This is why I have my own podcast, right? If you don't like it, you know, ask for your money back.
Right.
So the fact is, as a longtime Ferrari fan, why would Ferrari be in Mercedes camp over this whole thing. When you look at the current performance, they may have went into this season kind of really, teamed up with Mercedes against these regulation changes. But now they're getting their brains beat out again this season. So why would they still be? Why wouldn't they want the regulation changes? And see, I think now that you got Serge at the helm, he's a car guy at the end of the day. And he sees Mercedes as a car maker. And he's the guy that's been running around trying to get other car manufacturers to team up with Chrysler, Fiat, to do some, you know, economies of scale stuff and make cheap cars, right? So he sees this as really working with Mercedes and Fiat Chrysler and all this. Now, I'm not saying that's happening, but I can't think – because let me say this. If Luca D was still there, he would absolutely be for these regulation changes. He'd say, oh, yeah, bring
it. It's Ferrari, of course.
Sure they would.
The master contrarians.
Yeah. And if Mercedes is winning under these regulations, Ferrari under Luca D would be the first in line to get these regulations changed.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You said the sky was red. I said it was purple.
That's the way I roll. That's exactly right. So,
and if you don't like it, I'm out of the sport and you have nothing.
Yep, that's exactly right. And so that leaves you a couple options or maybe more, but why then would they not? If Luca D was there, he would. If Sergio Marchionne is not, why wouldn't he? Well, A, because he feels like he's got a team under these regulations that can beat Mercedes.
Yes.
Well, clearly, that isn't the case. All right? So if that's not the case, then what is it? You can't tell me that they're poor like Sauber and they don't want to spend the money.
No, they got plenty of money. That's not the case.
Right.
I mean,
it's not the case.
Unless they either still think they could gain ground on them or they think, the boss you know is better than the one you don't know, right? Maybe they feel that
could
these are regulations that they're familiar with and they can work within, right? As opposed to who knows what the hell, you know, gold medals and sprinklers might be what the regulation changes might involve, right?
Right.
That you kind of get to know them. Or you're right. There's some sort of other alternative reason why they'd like to be nice to car manufacturers.
Yeah, I'm thinking.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's but you're right. There's definitely a reason. This does not make any sense otherwise.
It doesn't. It doesn't make sense to me. And as a longtime Ferrari fan, now, if you guys have theories on why Ferrari would be absolutely in Mercedes camp and not really for these regulation changes, let me know, because traditionally this is completely out of character for this team.
And please make it the best conspiracy theory possible.
Right, right, right.
I love a good conspiracy theory.
Right. So you've got Mercedes, Williams, Force India, not for these regulation changes or not for, let me try this in English, not for certain parts of it. Now, on the flip side of that coin, what do you have? Well, you definitely have Red Bull and McLaren.
Right.
Now, perhaps less likely is a privateer with a reluctant engine supplier, meaning Red Bull with its Renault. Probably not unlikely. You probably could have figured that, right? Because Red Bull sitting over there with a recalcitrant engine, and they're not happy. And they were denied a competitive engine from Ferrari and Mercedes for this year. So they're not happy. But probably less predictable would be McLaren's position as a sole Honda supply contract holder. And they're gunning for the regulation shakeup, given that Honda just got into the pool. Right?
Yeah, right, right. You think that, again, similar to the, you know, the theory of, well, we know what these rules are, we figured them out. You finally figured them out after last year. You're finally not, you know, I almost fell out of my chair when, you know, like Alonso was passing people and it wasn't just not to be last, right? You know, but it's refreshing to hear. I forgot what that felt like, you know, right? So I could see that they're finally getting their act together. Why would you want the rules to change? But
yeah. And that's probably a little less predictable than Red Bull's endorsement of these regulations. Now, McLaren feel that Williams and Mercedes concerns are really unfounded and that the right changes are being made for 2017, saying, look, you know, more mechanical grip, bigger tires, more grip from the tires, less front wing, aero disturbance, all that, you know, Eric Bouye said, all of this is logical. You know, their teeth gnashing and hand wringing is for naught because these things are the right move for Formula One and McLaren believe in them. And I think that's interesting, given Honda just leveraged a crap ton of money in this new engine power unit. And so it's not that they're advocating changing engines next year. I think that's important to say. But still, it is interesting. So McLaren's behind that. So are Red Bull. Perhaps they, you know, relish the thought of no token spend in Honda's case, which they're doing away with next year. And that means they'll have unfettered engine development for the new Honda, which I think you and I can agree, Grace, they need. Yes.
Yes, excellent. Like take your damn tokens. Your jib. Tokens. We don't need no goddamn tokens, right?
Excellent, Smithers. Yeah. So
considering
yeah.
they spent, you know, all their tokens right in by race three or whatever, you know, right?
Right. So, you know, that's what I'm thinking. And Red Bull, clearly, as I said, very keen for the changes. They'd like to see parity amongst the engines and performance.
Yes, they would.
Yeah, big time.
Right. That is, they have a shirt that says that, right? I mean,
yeah, you got Dietrich Mateschitz just sitting in his office. Could we just not suck next year?
Right. Huh? I only have one request. Don't suck. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. It's not hard. Can't we handle this, people? Yeah, I agree.
All right. So that's what you have in split camp on the F1 strategy group.
Of course, because, you know, nothing is easy in Formula 1.
No. Interesting Q&A from Helmut Marko, Marko Helmut, over at the F1's website. And big kudos to F1's website, guys. I know you're avid listeners, and you hang on our every word. And I just want to give you big kudos because you guys are generating some terrific content over there. So, yeah, they really are. They're starting to do what you would expect Formula One's website to do, and they're doing it, and they're doing it very well, and I've enjoyed it. And
that's
I think
good.
You got to give props where it's due. You know, everybody accuses me always taking a ball bat to F1. That's not the case at all. I very much like them, and think they're doing a good job. So,
you know, you only watch the sport every week, right?
What, right. Well, yeah. You're just always beating up on F1. No. Okay.
Only words deserve. Why would I keep watching this if that was the case?
I wouldn't be doing this podcast if that was the case. Right. So anyway, in other news, now you will remember we talked about it last week when Lewis Hamilton was dog whistling that the mechanic change on his team, he had no idea what that was about. Absolutely no idea. And apparently when he showed up to work at the beginning of the season, didn't even ask. So he was dog whistling
just like,
conspiracy.
Who are you? Bob? Right. All right, that sounds good.
He's Bob. You're Frank? What?
Okay.
So he says he didn't know, and he was dog whistling, you know, for his hashtag Team LH to get behind this conspiracy thing, which Sky Sports, you know, they smelled blood, let's face it. They are a news organization, so they quickly corralled Toto in the pit lane, had him up against the wall, and said, "Hey, Toto, I'm going to read a series of tweets to you." And then they read these vile tweets from who knows who. You know, the tweets could have been coming from Sergio down in the Ferrari garage, for all I know. And they read these vile tweets, "Oh, you're screwing Lewis Hamilton, it's a conspiracy, and this is crazy, and all this stuff."
It's horrible.
It's terrible. Why would you do that to this guy? And
it's
Toto,
great. It's great entertainment, but horrible.
It was. And Toto was like, "Okay, look, first, I'm not going to sit here and respond to some lunatic on Twitter, all right? Well, then, oh, my gosh, the mobocracy went crazy. He's calling Mercedes fans lunatics. Oh, my gosh, what's going to go on? Dogs and cats living together. This is crazy.
Mass hysteria.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It's true. He has no penis. So then Mercedes quickly taxed because they felt like they stepped in a cow pie here. So then they write this open letter to fans.
Oh, my God.
And I posted it on our website. And they write this open letter to fans where they go into this exhaustive explanation, you know, basically absolutely laying out their commitment to Lewis and how they would never do this to Lewis. And they love Lewis. He's given them two championships. And they can think of no better ambassador for the brand and all this stuff. And how hard these teams and mechanics were, which is true. They all worked their tails off.
And
it was pretty incentive for Lewis to even hint at that anyway, because regardless who he's got on his team, those guys are working their butts off. So anyway, they have this, and the whole time I'm sitting here, I'm like Steve Matchett, who tweeted, "It's pretty stunning that a world championship winning team would go to this, would reduce themselves to this." This is just amazing to me that they would even engage this, right, Grace? There's that old notion, Grace, that you even engage it, you're giving it weight.
Yes. This is, you know, Kubica at BMW, right? The fact that it's being said out loud and we're all talking about it, right? That's,
right.
It's now, it's never, it's just not a good sign, right? When it's too over the top. It's too much of its own thing. This is not a good sign for Mercedes.
No, they should never have waded into this pool of just poo.
And especially because it's tweets. This is not news. Yeah. Regardless of what CNN thinks, what people tweet is not content. Mm-hmm. I like reading people's tweets. I like that people tweet things. I enjoy reading tweets when people send them to me. But they're not news, right?
No.
They're a way of sharing things. They're social media, and that's fine. But so I think that, you know, when approached with these, why all of a sudden this is supposed to be legitimate content? People are going to say, I mean, I'm sure Lewis wakes up on the wrong bed and people are like, oh, Mercedes is screwing him over, right?
Right.
You know,
it's crazy because these, you know, and I'm not picking on Sky or anybody, but in traditional media, certainly here in the States, it just seems like, you know, they're just phoning it in. They just sit back and read their Twitter and then they post stories. It's just news. It's kind of like, I really, really don't care what Axl Rose had to say about his first gig with AC/DC. And that really isn't news to me, you know?
Right.
The fact that they hired him to do the gig, that's news. But beyond that, I really don't give a damn, you know?
Right.
Did you hear he said this? Did you hear what Brian Johnson said? Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's crazy. So they attack him with these tweets, which I thought was not in the best taste.
No, but I mean, he could have handled it better, right? I think that you have to be prepared.
Yeah, yeah.
You always have to have some version of, I'm not answering your stupid shit, stop asking me that, in a very polite and professional way, which, you know,
right.
Like, hey, or do the Kimi Räikkönen look, you know, I got to go to the bathroom.
He should have just said, get down, you know?
Anything, right?
Anything.
I mean, I think it could have been handled better in the moment, but it did, you know. But I think this is just too much. I just don't think I would have addressed it. I just would have left it as you know, they ambushed him with tweets and that's ridiculous, and then not this over the topness about it.
Right, right. I think I would have just laughed and said whatever.
That's the case. Like, that was dumb. Watch out for Sky News, right? You know, like,
yeah.
All right, here's what we're gonna do next time this happens, and let it go. You know,
right.
This just smells of I don't know. This is
team
the
spirit. Oh, right.
No, this is like the apology letter, you know, hey, babe, sorry, I did something wrong. Here's some flowers and a card kind of thing, right?
But you know what they should have done? They should have done the American politician version of the false apology.
Oh, those are always
good. The apology where you didn't do anything wrong. You just apologized that they were offended about something.
Right.
I'm sorry you were offended about that.
Sorry I hurt your feelings, but this is what happened.
Right. So the letter was met with confusion as to why a title-winning constructor would wade into the frothing waters of mobocracy on social media. But then, if there is no conspiracy, then denying something, as I said, that doesn't exist seems to only give some weight to that, and it's kind of bizarre that they even did that. Now, the emotional reflex of the open letter either prompted, and I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, it either prompted a genuine open letter from Lewis to his fans, or more likely he was asked by the team to quell the situation after he was the one that dog whistled the conspiracy in the first place. So he rides to the rescue and says, whoa, everything's good now. You know, we're fine. My guys are working their tail off. Nothing to see here. No. There's no conspiracy, which is what he should have said originally, but he didn't. And so he comes in as the knight in armor and saves the day. So there you go. And he also had enough time, Grace, to say, everything's cool. Everything's fine. And by the way, I'm faster than Nico.
What? Okay. So first of all, this is never good. If this was a problem, you handle this interior, right? That's where I'm saying that it's, you know, I don't know, Bobby Kubica is always the one that's stuck in my head that would just be like, BMW is a bunch of crap and they're not paying me enough and they don't, and he would just say that in his interviews. And it's never good when that stuff is being aired because you know it was aired internally, right. And he feels that nobody's listening to him. So anytime some sort of upsetness is shared in public like that, that is not good, right? Because he certainly mentioned this. I can't imagine Lewis was just like, oh, everything's great. Hey, Bob. Hey, Frank. Yeah. Everything's great at the team. And then he was just like, boosh, social media, here's how I feel. Or, you know, I don't think that's how that works. I think that he probably shared these feelings with, you know, the people at Mercedes, and they refused to listen to him. And so then he felt the need to go public with it.
Right, right. Yeah,
yeah,
it was interesting. It's just crazy. Hey, speaking of BMW.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Our friend Esteban Gutierrez tweeted a picture that I saw today in front of Ferrari's headquarters in Maranello. Mm-hmm. And do you know who he was standing next to?
Who is he standing next to?
Dr. Mario Thiessen.
What? D-Matt.
D-Matt.
Where's he been?
Where has he been? And what's he doing in front of Ferrari? Does he work for Ferrari or something that I didn't know about?
Did he still have the facial hair? Because that was
great. He looked great. Yeah, D-Matt. You and I were big D-Matt. Yeah, Dr. Mario Amber Thiessen.
That's great. Yeah, in case you've been listening to the show for like the past 10 years.
Yeah, yeah, people new to the show are like, who? What?
Who?
Gosh, you guys suck. Inside jokes
are so old.
This is such a bad podcast. You guys are. Oh. So, no, Dr. Mario Thiessen, the head of BMW's Formula One racing program. So, okay, fine. You want to call me out of the carpet? You have every right to do it, but I'm going to tell you a little history. Esteban Gutierrez, his very first contract was given to him by Dr. Mario Thiessen.
Oh. Oh, that's good. I think that's good. I would love to see him in Ferrari. I'd love to see him in Formula One somewhere.
I would, too. He's a great guy. And I didn't go Google and see what he's doing now. He could be in DTM or something. I don't know. But good guy. All right. So that's the open
one. Or he could be, a facial hair model. He could show Lewis how it's actually. This is how a grown man grows facial hair.
That's right. That's right. This is how you wear the caterpillar on your lip. Oh, yeah. So in other news, Grace, I wanted to talk about Force India a little bit, if you'll indulge me, Grace.
Okay.
The reason I want to talk about it is, okay, so I'm going to make this quick for you guys. You remember last year, Paul and I talked at length about Force India waiting until mid-season to come out with their B-Spec chassis and how well that worked. We think it worked great, and they did really well on the last races of the season. So much so that we felt like that chassis was the one they were bringing into this season, and that it might continue that pace and at least lead to some decent point scoring opportunities in the first flyaway races. Unfortunately, it didn't do that, and it wasn't really until Russia this past weekend or 2 weeks ago that the team sort of recovered, and Perez had that fabulous recovery drive in Russia to score points. And that was really the first glimmer that we had from that. Now, Paul and I were wondering earlier this season in some of the podcasts, what would Force India do in 2016? You know, they're stretched, you know, they're like the privateers, midfield teams, money's tough to come by. And especially when the guy who owns the team is in exile from India and on the run.
Yes.
You know, that's always a little odd to see Vijay Mallya in a trench coat and a hat, a fedora and dark Wayfarers on, you know, scuttling through King's Cross Station trying to get away from the cops. But
he's coming back. Don't worry. It's fine.
Oh, yeah, it's fine, man.
He's not running from his extradition. It's okay.
No. It's just a misunderstanding. Okay. So, you know, that Vijay, I'm telling you, man, he's
got pizzazz.
He's got pizzazz, doesn't he?
Sure does.
He sure do.
With all his pizzazz.
Woohoo! Go Vijay. Run, Vijay, run! This guy's going to be... I mean, only in Formula One could you have a team owner that's on the run from extradition and exile, running around the globe on his yacht or plane or whatever it is, and still racing, and yet on the run from the law. It's hilarious. I mean, this... Really, think about that. That actually puts some of Flavio's things that he did to shame.
That's true. Now he is officially the new Flavio Briatore.
He is. He's got the bling like Flavio had.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, man. So anyway, we wondered what the team would do in 2016. Would they repeat last year's success, or due to the proposed changes in 2017, would they just wait until next year? Well, some of that was answered this week, and I've been actually probably unnaturally keen to know. I don't know why this is really sticking with me, but it is. I really wanted to know that. This week they came out and said that they are going to bring some decent upgrade packages to Spain this weekend. And if they work, then the team will continue to develop them throughout 2016. If they don't work as well as they had hoped, then they will probably cash it in and start to look forward to 2017 and work on that car. So there's the answer.
Fair enough.
Yeah, makes sense.
I like that. We're going to throw some shit on. If it works, we'll keep it. If it doesn't, we're going to get rid of it.
There you go, man. You know, if we throw this crap on and it works great, then yeah, we're in the hunt. We'll do it. But otherwise, we're phoning it in.
Otherwise, it's a shit box and we'll wait till 2017.
That's right. Yeah, we're just going to wait till 2017 and then we'll make another one. So anyway, also for this weekend as we head into the Spanish Grand Prix, Renault is set for an engine test upgrade. Now, this is interesting. I had this wrong. I'm offering mea culpa here for all the listeners. The fact of the matter is that Renault is going to try out their B-spec engine in Spain. And if successful, they will then roll it out for the Canadian Grand Prix. And that, my friends, is when Red Bull will get their new engine. Now, I wasn't clear on this because I'm old and I'm decrepit and I don't read too good. I missed
the whole...
better
than Paul.
Well, sure. Yeah, absolutely. That's a given. I miss this thing. I miss the fact that Red Bull basically had a Renault engine supply contract and they were going to get new engines from Renault anytime they come up with upgrades. I kind of miss that. For whatever reason, I thought this whole rebadging thing and calling it TOG, they were going to develop that on their own with Ilion, and that's what they were going to do. But I'm completely wrong on that. So if I've alluded to that in previous podcasts, it's my fault. I take the heat because I was wrong on that. Apparently, when Renault comes out with the new upgraded engine, they're going to give it to Red Bull. So
I just
where they'll
know
promptly take a Dremel and file off the word Renault on the crankcase and then take a grease pen or something and write TOG on there.
Right. You know, the go fast tape, right? They'll just, it's only three letters. They can do that easily. The G might be a little tough, but.
The G be tough, yeah.
But so again, much like Force India that says, well, if it works, we'll keep it. If it doesn't work, well, wait for 2017. There is no clause that says, and if it doesn't work, here's what's going to happen. So yeah, I don't know how that's going to go if the engine doesn't work so well in Spain, the B-spec.
I don't know. You know, I guess it's back to the drawing board.
Yeah, that can't be
for
good.
Cyril. I don't know. Who knows?
All right. Yep, or so. Maybe they'll still. You know what? Maybe they'll still give it to Red Bull.
I think that would be awesome, Chris.
I think that they're going to run the B-spec in Spain, and good, bad, or otherwise, that's what they're going to give to Red Bull in Canada.
You can see that conversation. Can you not?
Yep.
I mean, imagine if you will. They get ready. They're getting ready to go to Canada, and they meet at the Red Bull motorhome, and the conversation goes like kind of like this. So they're sitting there, right? And you got Christian Horner, and he looks over to Cyril and goes, "Okay, so you ran that Renault engine. You know, is it all working out? You got a lot of performance? Oh yeah, sure. Okay, so it's ready to give to us, and we're ready to race it. Yeah, sure. Okay, so it is a lot faster. Yeah, sure. Okay, fine." All right, when are you going to get it? Oh, it's right. It's just outside. It's in a crate. Just pick it up on your way out. Okay. So they give them this engine that they know wasn't that good, and then you watch like a nuclear explosion at the Red Bull headquarters.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying is that I think that would be fun.
That would
be
awesome.
Yeah, it's a good engine. Yeah, it's a good engine. You guys should run it in Canada. It'll be great.
It'll work great. So yeah, anyway, apologies. I was a bit cloudy as I thought that Red Bull were doing their own thing and so there you have it. In other news, this is just that's a bad miss. Sauber to miss the first in season test. So the teams are gonna stay in Spain.
Barcelona.
You got it. And they're going to test the first in-season test. Now, unfortunately, Sauber's not going to be there.
Oh.
Sauber lost Mark Smith a couple months ago, and now they just left Tim Mahlen. So two of their technical wonks have just left. They had payroll that wasn't paid. The team's going to miss the test later this month or later this week or next week, whenever that is. And they said, look, we're not going to be there because, quite honestly, we don't have any upgrades for the car.
Right.
And the stipulations of the test is that we have to use a reserve driver. Yeah, we don't have one of those either.
Maybe they could borrow a Kvyat.
Yeah, that would be good. I'm thinking, I can't get this out of my head, but it does make you wonder if the most recent inter-office memo didn't read something like this. Quote, would the last person out please turn the lights out?
End right.
Quote. Just not good, Grace.
No, that's not good at all.
What do
you do? They should call Charsley. He'll come do it.
Well, he would. He could turn that ship around, Grace.
That's right. That's right.
Absolutely.
This is the modern Niki Lauda. He could tell him what to do with that ship box. He'll fix it.
Absolutely. He'd be on it. So I don't know what's going to happen with Sauber here.
Yeah, it's not good, though. That nothing good. That's what...
No.
That is no money. That is...
Yeah.
When you're not paying your people, you're losing people. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they don't have a reserve driver. I mean, that's...
And no upgrades at all.
Yeah. Those are, like, basic things. Those are, like, I don't have a coat, right? Or, you know, I mean...
I have no roof over my head.
That's what I'm saying, right? As far as Formula One, you know... Piaget's pyramids of needs. These are all of them, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So
it's the Colton. It's the Coltonborn hierarchical of needs.
Right. Exactly. Right. So these are all
sponsors?
Things that you can. Oh, yeah. We don't need those.
Yeah. Who needs sponsors?
Upgrades. Yeah. You know. So it's not good. They're missing. You know, some of the really big pieces that you need to run a Formula One team.
I'm hoping, against all hope, that, you know, when you look up and down the paddock for Monisha the last few races,
yeah,
nothing. I am hoping that all this time she has been negotiating a complete and comprehensive buyout from somebody that's going to put serious money or a manufacturer behind this team. I hope that's what she's working on.
Or she's finding a new job.
Or she herself is out doing job interviews and couldn't make it to the race.
I'm just saying this.
She's
smart together.
Her resume, her CV, she's got that circulating. And
Or doing both. I think that's possible, too.
Yeah.
Would you be interested in a sponsorship and or hiring a team principal?
Right. Right. Do you have any marketing dollars for this season or any open positions? Either
right,
one.
Right, right.
I'm good with either.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? Anyway, bad news there. Yeah, okay. On the interesting news front, it was put to Haas F1 about this kind of percolating concept of Romain Grosjean possibly racing in a NASCAR race.
What?
Yeah, and Haas says they see no reason that he couldn't do it either this year or definitely next year. And there's no reason he couldn't drive in a NASCAR race, and they think it would be awesome, and they think it would be a real boost to the sport to have a Formula One driver come over and drive in the race, which immediately made me think of Ricky Bobby.
You Formula One jazz nut job.
So I'm thinking this is going to be interesting. So Haas is going to take Grosjean, put him in a car, and run him in NASCAR.
That's a horrible idea. It's wrestling on wheels. It's a horrible idea.
It's wrestling on wheels.
I didn't come up with that. I wish I had. That is a great descriptor of NASCAR these days. But
So why? All right, unpack that for us, Grace. Why is it a bad idea?
Because, okay, first of all, we've had Formula One drivers. We've had IndyCar drivers, right? Is anybody? I don't know. You know, is anybody like, ooh, Sam Hornish is in NASCAR? No. Nobody was excited. That's probably also like 10-year-old news at this point. But, you know, so this has happened, right? You know, we've had guys in trucks and we've
Poor
had guys.
Sam Hornish.
Yeah, I know, right? It was horrible. He's a nice guy. I've met him, but, you know, should never gotten to NASCAR. It was horrible. So thanks, Roger Penske. You know, I just think so I think that aspect of it, this sort of like, it'll be great for PR and suddenly Americans are going to be like, oh, Formula One, you know, like they all sound like a speed, you know, right? Oh, Formula One, I'm going to go watch that.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
Right.
Oh, Pops, right. Let's go watch Formula One, right? That ain't happening, right? Because.
You know, all it is and I'm not that close to Roma. In fact, I don't know him at all. But if I was, I would say, you know, Roman, don't do this. I mean, don't know the series. You don't know the way that they race. You don't know the racecraft of oval racing like NASCAR does. You're going to get in there, and all that's going to – you're just going to be laughing fodder for all the NASCAR fans and say, Formula One driver and shit.
Right.
That's all it's going to amount to, you know? And then what I would say is, okay, fine. If you're going to put Grosjean in NASCAR, then you get Tony Stewart or whoever. And you
Tony
get
won't
some,
fit in the cars.
You jam, get some Vaseline and a Belcher crane and shoehorn him in that into Esteban Gutierrez's car and then let him run in Formula One and we'll see who's laughing last.
No, I think that – but that's what I mean is I think that any sort of like – PR angle. The only way this works out well is if Roman Grosjean gets to keep the purse, because I'm pretty sure even if he comes in dead ass last, he's going to make a boatload of money if he's actually in a NASCAR race, right?
I think he come in 43rd, he might get some owner points to race in Daytona 500, I think.
In case Billy Elliott doesn't qualify next year.
Right. I think he gets $1 million just for showing up and parking in the garage.
That's what I'm saying. So I think the only way Grosjean benefits is that, you know, if he gets to keep the purse at the end of the day, because I'm pretty sure that would be some nice bank in his pocket. But I think this whole, like, I mean, it'd be like if you were watching a football game and they brought out a soccer player, you'd be like, who the hell is this guy? I'm not going to watch soccer because, you know, well, I guess there's already soccer guys. They're the kickers. But, you know, if you brought in, you know, I don't even know anybody who plays soccer, but besides, like, David Beckham. But you brought in somebody who currently plays. That
Ozil.
Somebody like, there you go. That you or Paul would be like, oh, my God, that's amazing. I would be like, well, okay, great. You're in the way of my football. You know, it's just not – people aren't – you aren't suddenly going to get eyeballs on a Formula One. It's a different thing. It's not –
yeah, it is.
Not any more than you're going to get me to watch – NASCAR, if you had somebody from NASCAR racing in Formula One for one off, thought that that's possible. But
And I don't think that NASCAR fans are going to be sitting at Bristol going, okay, no, who's in that car? Roman what? And then they say Roman Grosjean? Who's that? Yeah. And then they're going to be driving around and he finishes last. Well, he's in Formula One? Well, maybe we ought to go start watching all those races. Nah, not going to happen.
But, you know, if this has really been, like, a lifelong dream of Roman Grosjean, or he just wants to try it out, now's his chance. You know what I mean? Like, Hans is going to be...
Yeah, true.
So if you're just like, man, I've always wanted to drive a hovercraft, or I've always wanted... Like, go do it, man. This is the only shot you're going to get at it. So
I've always wanted peel and eat shrimp. Okay, here's your chance.
Now's your chance. All right, go. So I don't know. I just don't buy the whole, you know, cross-marketing. This will get... NASCAR fans in the Formula One, whatever. It's not going to happen. They don't care.
They don't care. Anyway, so be on the lookout for Rogro.
He
could getting it woed up in turn four. Booty, booty, boogity, boys. Hell yeah. Got that going for you. All right, Grace. I'm out of news, man. I am On that note. That means we can hand out some awards, though.
All right, I'm ready.
I do got me some of them. All right, the first award of the podcast is always Post of the Week. All right, now, if you happen to be an IndyCar fan, I got some good news for you. So here's what we are cooking up for you on the IndyCar front. Our very own Dr. Doug Patterson. Is going to be at Indy. He's got creds. He'll be there taking pictures and creating content for the 100th anniversary of the Indy 500. That's super exciting. He's going to be there. Our own motorsport monk, Tom, the fifth of Firth, he is going to be doing a series on leading up to the Indy 500, a little bit about the history and those kind of things. So I know those are already staged and ready to go.
Cool.
And so we're going to be doing that. And so anyway, if you see expanded coverage of IndyCar on our website over this next month, that's because it is IndyCar. And you know how IndyCar, they like to make a meal out of this one race. They just do stuff all month long, you know. And so anyway, and this is the 100th anniversary. You got to have some reverence for that. That's pretty incredible. So anyway, they're going to be doing that. And so anyway, Doug... posted a story about that was out today about IndyCar possibly racing in China, and they were just working on some of the details and whether the government and blah 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 blah. But I found the post of the week by someone who goes by the weight transfer. I thought it was hilarious, given the fact that also in the news they're talking about the failure of the Boston Grand Prix, who our very own Grace has sat at and tried to support. Or is Baltimore? Yeah, sorry.
It could be Boston, but it could be.
Who cares?
Really Baltimore,
you know, it's East Coast town. What do I know? So anyway, the weight transfer said, yeah, getting the money up front would be a welcome change in IndyCar history.
I mean, right. I mean, but this is true in any sport in some sense. Like, why does anybody host the Olympics, right? Nobody gains money off of having the Olympics or the FIFA World Cup, right? You know, it's not why. If you are doing it because you're going to earn money for your city, you are fooling yourself, Baltimore, right? That's not going to happen. So, yeah, it would be nice to have some money up front for a change.
I know. And this is like, you know, you make fun of Bernie and you're saying, well, you know, I've already done the money. He don't race unless somebody pays.
That's right.
When he gets a check, then they'll race. And that doesn't happen any other way. Reminds me of when I was in college, Grace, my very first semester. I was living in the dorm in college, and there was these two guys that were in the room across the hall from me. Mm-hmm. And they were apparently up-and-coming hairstylists, and so they would always do haircuts, right?
Okay.
So all the guys in the dorm, instead of going down and getting their hair cut, they would just, this didn't confront me, obviously, but they would just go down, knock on the door, and they go in. These guys cut their hair and make some money. So then it got to be like a line, you know? And finally, they had this big piece of paper posted on their door that said, no bucks, no cuts.
There you go.
There you go. Lesson number one for IndyCar, no bucks, no cuts.
No bucks, no cuts.
There you have it. That's the end of the story.
That was a long way to go for that, but I like it.
It was a long way to go for that, I know. And I
tell stories the same way.
Reminds me of that time.
That's right. But yeah, no, I think absolutely no bucks, no cuts should be every city's motto.
It should. No bucks, no cuts, man. That's the way it goes.
That's right.
It's how it rolls. All right. Well, the next award happens to be Grace's favorite award, and that is the Lewis Hamilton Fashion Award.
Lewis Hamilton, Lewis Hamilton, there's no stopping him. Lewis Hamilton, Lewis Hamilton, there's no stopping him.
Break it down. Oh, yeah. Don't tell me you weren't bobbing your head right there.
Oh, absolutely. So I think that what needs to happen is that when Lewis wins his next race, mm-hmm. 16 races from now, because unlike Paul, I'm still on the Nico train. I don't think Lewis is going to do it in Spain. Little preview there. But so I think that when Lewis does win another race, that's what you play instead of the national anthem.
Ooh. That would be awesome.
Yes.
You could just see him standing on that top step of the podium and that fires up.
That's his song. He doesn't need England's national anthem. He's got his own national anthem.
I like it. That's good.
I think that's what you play.
Yeah, I agree. You'll be happy to know, folks, that Grace and I have not selected Lewis Hamilton for this week's Fashion Award. After getting scolded, about always picking Lewis, we dug deep this week, but we are keeping it in the spirit of the competition, are we not, Grace?
Absolutely.
Yes. So
that's how we roll here.
It is how we roll. So it is a easy dotted line to our award winner this week, who happens to be current world championship leader Nico Rosberg. I'll post a picture in the body of this podcast. However, Nico, I got to tell you, he not only is going to beat Lewis on the track, he's trying to beat him off the track in fashion.
Yes.
Now, that's a tall order by anyone's measure, let's face it. But Nico's trying.
I think that Nico is dressing like a normal human being and not from the Lewis Hamilton collection.
Right. Well, Nico's got this, he's got this nice outfit on, these great big headphones on, and he's got that sort of tweed jacket from the David Niven collection from JCPenney's. I mean, everything looks good. It's a good fashionable look for Nico.
Right.
So there you have it. That's our fashion war because
maybe
go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt your momentum. Right. I was just going to say that, you know, they did the engineer switch, right, with the teams.
Right.
Maybe they should also change stylists. Maybe that would help.
Ooh, that would be awesome.
Because I'm not saying that Nico Rosberg, like, rolled over and put this outfit on. But I am pretty sure Lewis Hamilton might roll over and put on those on his outfits, right? He owns those clothes. So I get it. This is probably somebody put him in this, and it's probably, you know, a sunglasses ad or something, right? But he looks sharp. And Lewis, in the same situation, would not look this sharp. It would look kind of strange, right?
It would.
And maybe Lewis should just be in the NBA. I mean, maybe he's really just fashionable for the wrong sport, right? And he really, instead of shopping the David Nevins collection, he shops from the Russell Westbrook collection. Right. And that's fine, too. But I just think this is a well-put-together outfit, and maybe they should change up some stylists.
It is. And I got to be honest with you, we also picked it because it does debunk a little bit that common sort of stereotype driven by Michael Schumacher, the Germans dress funny.
Well, you know, he didn't grow up in Germany.
Well, right. He grew up in Monaco.
Right. So, you know, I mean, I'm going to go with, you know, nature and nurture here. I'm going to go with this is, while innately he's German, I think that society around him has given a sense of fashion. Unlike if he actually lived in Germany, like Seudel or Michael Schumacher,
right.
The culture, the nurture part of it really would have driven his fashion.
Right, right, right. Yeah, that's but a good point.
Or you're like, you know, David Coulthard living the dream, right? You don't have to be attractive and still get the pretty ladies if you make enough money. I mean, maybe this is just an example of you can overcome your innate Germanness and dress like a nicely well put together, no jorts, you know?
No jorts. Yeah. Yeah, could be.
But nobody does fashion like Michael Schumacher. I mean, that was always. And
that
I
was
also,
a treat.
I love that it was the whole family. I wonder if Mick's going to carry this tradition on of crazy.
No, I haven't seen Nick in street clothes. I haven't seen that. So
I didn't either, but we can look forward to that because I'm sure he'll get close enough that his fashion will
grace
our pages.
He may. He's a good looking young man. So yeah, that'll be good. All right. Well, the final award is always the Matt Bishop Bravado Award. All right. It goes to none other than the Spaniard himself, the master of disaster, Fernando Alonso. Ay, 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 Alonso. He says, quote, "So I don't think we need to put that attention on the overtaking and following cars, because before it was as difficult as it is now, or even more. And the races were great. We just need the fastest cars to produce a good show. We need to put some noise in the cars, some good battles, and the big names fighting for the championships. That'll improve the show." End quote.
Some, you know, sprinklers and some gold medals.
So he's saying, you know, I hate to tell everyone took the survey, but the whole we need more passing, that's bunk. And that's not what we need. We need faster cars, noisier cars, and oh, by the way, I should be at the front batting for championships. Big names.
That's right.
There you go.
He should be.
He should. I agree. We're being deprived. No, it doesn't. And Grace, we're being deprived of what otherwise would be an incredible championship with Vettel, Hamilton, Fernando, Nico, Kimi, mm-hmm. even Ricardo. I mean, imagine all those guys if they were up in amongst it. That would be some incredible racing. And it reminds me, because Dave, our own Dave Mortimer, wrote a piece on how many champions are on the grid, and kind of did a then and now piece, and he goes back and talks about the number of champions on the same grid, and it's a good piece. So it's a quite an instructive piece too. So go check that out. So all right, Grace. Spanish Grand Prix in Barcelona. We have to have our picks. Give me your podium and first out.
So I went Nico, of course, Nico Rosberg. Sure. I feel he's going to continue his streak of 17 races and win another one. And then I went Sebastian Vettel and Lewis Hamilton, which is what I picked last week.
All right. Very good. Your first out?
Everybody's new Pastor Maldonado, Danny Kvyat.
Ouch, that hurts. You were just defending the guy earlier and you pick him first out. You are ruthless, you know, Grace.
I know, but you know, I think he's a popular choice right now amongst us.
He really is.
I think I can't squander my kiss of death anymore on McLaren. I need to get some points for first out. So
yeah.
I like the irony of Kvyat being first out. I like that.
Yeah. That would be good. All right. I had Nico for the win, Lewis second, Seb third. First out, Haryanto.
Also, the runner-up for the Pastor Maldonado seat.
Yes. You ask for miracles, I give you Haryanto.
That's right.
There you have it. That's it. Well, that does it for this podcast, as always, but we'll be back next week. Also, as I mentioned, be watching out because I'm going to post Paul's Track Talk podcast, and it'll be in the same feed. So check that out and make sure you listen to it before you watch the race, and then you will have a lot more to look for during the race, and you'll be more informed about what the drivers are doing in each corner and straight. So check that out as well. You can go to our website, share your opinion with decorum and civility as always, and you can go over to the forum, start your own conversation, of course. Same rules apply, decorum and civility. Also, Monday nights, 9 p.m. UK time, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, hashtag F1 Chat on Twitter. You can go over there and you can write some vile stuff to Toto Wolff if you'd like to about conspiracies. Be careful. He'll call you a lunatic. And then so our own Tom and Lauren do that, do a fabulous job of hosting that. And it's a great time and a great discussion on Twitter if you like Twitter. Also, if you like the podcast, spread the news, would you? Tell some folks about it. Don't keep this little gem just for yourself. Don't be selfish. Spread the news. Get your friends to listen, even if they don't like Formula One. You know, what else have they got to listen to? And who can argue with the price? So get that, spread that out. Also, give us a good rating on iTunes. And the donations are greatly appreciated, folks. Always appreciated. And, gosh, I guess that's it. So until I come back next week to review the race with Paul Charsley, this is Todd, a.k.a. Negative Camber, saying so long, Grace.
See you in a couple weeks.
That's it, man. Game over, man. Game over.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it's not as simple. Like Paul, you know, he just goes in, lifts up the lazy boy and pees underneath it, and he's done.
That's right, there's no problem. There's a pee pad down there, it's all good.
I wonder if Paul's wife's got him trained to the papers.